ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
That a man could walk into a shopping centre on a busy Saturday afternoon and go on a stabbing spree is horrifying, and it's hard to understand how anyone could do that. It's left so many people demanding answers. Today we have a look at the offender, Joel Cauchi's, mental health history, and ask whether anything could have been done to stop the attack and save lives. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
It's an attack that's shocked a city and a nation. Six innocent people killed in a stabbing spree at a busy shopping centre in Sydney's east.
We are continuing to work through the profiling of the offender, but very clearly to us at this stage it would appear that this is related to the mental health of the individual involved.
This is a parent's absolute nightmare when they have a child with mental illness, that something like this would happen. And my heart goes out to the people our son has hurt. If he was in his right mind, he would be absolutely devastated at what he has done.
He's a monster. To me, he was a very sick boy.
Hi, I'm Professor Kimberly Dean. I'm a forensic psychiatrist, and as well, I'm a researcher and an educator in the field of forensic mental health.
Kimberly, the Westfield knife attack, it's an absolute tragedy, of course, for so many people. And it's just really hard to comprehend, isn't it, that six lives were lost.
Yes.
And of those people, that they were in their prime, they had everything to live for, I guess, as women. As well, we can really relate to some of the victims, you know, in terms of age or mothers.
Absolutely.
Really hard to comprehend.
It absolutely is very shocking. And I think most people can kind of imagine themselves or people they know in that exactly that innocent situation of being in a shopping centre and for something so horrendous to happen. It's really, for most people, completely unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's really important, I think, to understand how this could have happened. It's really important to get a sense of that.
Yes.
We know Kimberly, the offender, 40-year-old Joel Cauchi, had a long history of mental illness. And we learnt a lot about him from his parents this week, didn't we?
We are just ordinary people who brought up our son as best we could. We did what we could for him. He got a degree.
I don't know what's wrong with why he would do this. I did everything in my power to help him.
Yes, the little I've seen of the interviews with his parents is also pretty heartbreaking.
Yes.
to listen to, and to be honest, fairly familiar to, it would be, to mental health professionals to hear their story and the frustration that they've had in trying to support their son who's had a serious and complex mental health problem for a very long time.
Yeah, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was just 17, so it's an illness that he's had for a very long time.
Yes.
They live in Toowoomba, his parents, west of Brisbane, and that's where Joel Cauchi grew up. And as soon as they saw the television vision on Saturday afternoon, they knew it was their son and that he'd done the unspeakable. I mean, absolutely shocking to see that.
I mean, how would you feel if your son was the man that I recognised on TV, and I rang the New South Wales police and I said, look, if you don't know a motive, I'll give you one. He's got schizophrenia, you know.
That must have been terrible when you and your wife recognised him on TV.
Oh, my wife said, this looks like Joel, when you saw his head on the stairway, his head now. I said,
and we know from his parents that he was diagnosed, you know, a long time ago, and he was in the care of doctors for about 18 years. He did well at school, according to his parents. He graduated from university. He was very high functioning, by the sound of it.
Yes, I mean, it's obviously really difficult. I wouldn't want to comment too much on the details of his case and his diagnosis. Mm. You know, I don't know the circumstances, but Certainly people who have severe and complex mental health problems like schizophrenia, every case is very different. Mm-hmm. And even the diagnosis of schizophrenia, it doesn't refer to a single disease, really. It refers to probably a whole range of different problems that we fit under that category. It's not uncommon for people to develop this kind of disorder at about that kind of age, you know, peak age of onset, sort of late teens into early adulthood. And people can certainly have had, you know, quite well-functioning lives up until that point and be really completely derailed by the onset of illness. But that's not true for everyone. You know, some people experience an episode of psychosis, is a term we use, and never do again. You know, others can be quite well in between episodes. Some people deteriorate over time. It's very variable and very individual and depends on lots of other things.
His parents seemed to suggest that things really started to change in the past 5 years. He was moving between cities, Brisbane, Toowoomba, the Gold Coast. Of course, he ended up in Sydney. They do mention that he stopped taking medication and stopped treatment. How concerning is that?
Well, it's also not an uncommon picture. Mm. One of the difficulties for people with these kind of severe and complex mental health problems is that they don't always appreciate themselves that they need help, treatment and support. And sometimes the treatments, particularly the medication that's prescribed, while it can be very effective for the symptoms of psychosis, they come often with side effects, which people find hard to tolerate. And they're not always fully effective even for the symptoms of psychosis. So it's not as straightforward. And people often don't recognise that they need help. They become completely dominated by the experiences they're having, this change in reality that they experience. They might have delusional ideas, be very paranoid. They might be hearing voices. You know, those kind of experiences become really dominating of their lives. And it's very hard to make what we would otherwise think of as sort of rational decisions to seek help and to take treatment.
Mm. In 2023, Andrew Couchy, his father, recalled a really disturbing thing, that his son had returned home with a set of US Army combat knives, and that really worried him. Police actually became involved at this point.
And he had a fascination with knives. You know, I watched these guys in America who kill people. And they've got a fascination with guns. And so if you've got a mental illness and you've got a fascination with guns, there's a chance of you using them.
But as we know, of course, he ended up in Sydney and the rest is just an absolute tragedy. So I guess, Kimberly, the question that a lot of people have now after this tragedy is, could it have been avoided? Police have stressed he was known to them, but he's never been charged with any criminal offence. And the Queensland Police Assistant Commissioner, Roger Lowe, he's made the point that being mentally ill, it's not a crime.
We have people in our society who suffer from mental health. They go about their days without trouble, without causing these type of crimes. Mental health in society is not a crime. And we do not run an intelligence regime on persons who suffer from mental health.
That's true, right?
Absolutely. I was pleased to read those comments from the police. And I think it's first important to say that, you know, I can't really comment on what would have made a difference in this case. I don't know the details, and there's going to be extensive inquiry into all of those aspects. And to be honest, even when you know all of the details and you get to the end of these inquiries, it's not always that clear that anything in particular would have made a specific difference in this case. You know, it's not as often a very complex set of circumstances. I think this case does highlight that there is this group of people in our community who, and not insignificant number, schizophrenia is not common, but it's about 1% of the population, so it's not rare either. And so there's a group of people in our community who I think most clinicians working in the area would say are not sufficiently well served by our current services in Australia. I think services, especially public mental health services, state-based public mental health services, are really stretched. They really find it difficult to provide the level of care to this group. We don't have sufficient supported housing. Joel was homeless and itinerant, as you describe, and that's not an uncommon combination and is probably an additional risk. But I think we need to properly fund our public mental health services for this group in particular, and seeing better outcomes and overall seeing a reduced level of risk. Then I think we need to, you know, address the resource shortages, the staff shortages, with real trouble recruiting and retaining staff in this area. It needs to be an area of focus for government.
I was going to say, is there any way, do you think, that he could have been labelled as a potential risk to others, given the history with knives? Did he fall through the cracks?
I really think that's an impossible to answer yes. question at this stage. And as I say, I'm not sure it will even be that clear at the end of a really thorough inquiry whether that would have made any difference.
Mm.
You know, identifying people who present a risk to others is actually really challenging. There are a lot of people with severe and complex mental health problems who, you know, don't present any risk, and it's quite hard to separate those who do from those who don't.
Mm.
So I think the better message is really about improving the level of care and support for this group as a whole.
So just tell me, Kimberly, what can we do if we're out and about and we see someone who's obviously suffering from really bad mental health? I mean, what should we do given what's happened in Bondi?
I sometimes wonder that myself as a psychiatrist, you know, wandering around the community and seeing people in those, you know, obvious circumstances. I don't think there's not a lot an individual can do in the, you know, in those kind of moments. And I wouldn't really advocate that people try and intervene themselves. I think if they're really worried that there are some risks or hazards around, I think, you know, they can call the police or they can call an emergency mental health number. One of the services models that's developed for this group is community mental health teams that focus specifically on people who are not living in secure accommodation. And those kind of services, I think, are the kind that we might want to look at expanding and really supporting. That's really, I think, all we can do, as well as advocating to improve the treatments and supports for this group of people.
Is there more that police could be doing, ensuring that people are referred to the services that you mention?
I think police have a tough job in this context. Mm. They really do. It's not their area of expertise, but it is a really significant proportion of their work. And I think many police would tell you it's the most difficult part of their work. So I would advocate for more training and more support for the police in this area. We don't need them to be mental health clinicians, but they need to know enough about how the service works, where they can take people, you know, how they can best approach people in these circumstances. So, you know, every step of the service process needs to be, I think, a focus for governments to improve.
Professor Kimberly Dean is a forensic psychiatrist from the University of New South Wales. If this episode has raised any issues for you or anyone you know, Lifeline is one service that can help. Contact them on 131114. This episode was produced by Bridget Fitzgerald and Nell Whitehead. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. You can find all our episodes of the podcast on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.